Welcome to Manson Mitchell. My name is Jen Martin, and I'll be your guest host today while Gary and Suzanne are away. I am honored that they asked me to guest host and glad that one important member of the A-team is helping here today. Hi, Benny. How you doing?
Hey there. Welcome. And to our humble home, I should say.
It's great to actually meet you in person. I've been listening to the station for such a long time, and to see you, the man behind the curtain, is really cool.
Yes, I'm the guy behind the curtain. Woo!
Well, I feel like I'm in good hands, so this is going to be exciting.
It's our pleasure to have you.
Great show. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you. Today's show is about life mastery, and if you want to know what I mean about what life mastery is, you have got to stay tuned to hear our guest, Todd Allen Cutterback. He is author of The 6 Keys to Life Mastery. Todd's book lays out what it takes to overcome those voices in your head that are constantly undermining you. Can anyone relate to that? Voices in your head that tell you that you're not good enough, that you're not worthy, and all of that. Well, Todd's story is quite inspiring. And when I first found this book, I had actually known Todd through the Toastmasters organization, the public speaking organization. And I saw Todd in front of a room speaking with quite a lot of authority and warmth and confidence. And I heard him talk about the fact that he has this business. I found out later that it was a business that he started 20 years ago. He left a job that was quite safe and comfortable with a major employer here in the Pacific Northwest. And he took a big risk, followed his dream, started his own company, and made it very successful. He has 14 employees that the business is their livelihood. And he has he has customers such as Boeing, Washington Ferries, and so forth. But this is not simply a story about a guy that had a dream to leave a job and start a business and make it happen. This is actually a story about much more than that. This is a story about a guy that battled his internal demons, which I think we can all relate to at one time in our life, and he won. Not the first time, not the second time, but the third time. And so it took him actually several reawakenings to get on the solid ground that he's on now. This is a story of spiritual reawakening. And I love this because here we are sitting in Bellevue, beautiful view out here, the land of Microsoft, the land of you name it tech company, where data rules, where linear thinking is what we're all about. And here's a guy that lives very much in that world, makes his livelihood, has made a good livelihood at this for many years, and can completely relate to that way of thinking. However, he has awakened something within him that has allowed him to live a different quality of life by not relying just on his head. It's a story about a guy that's got out of that headspace and into his spiritual life and how it changed it all for him. So I invite you to settle in for the next 55 minutes or so and stay tuned to hear what Todd has learned that might shed some light on your own path. Todd, welcome to Manson Mitchell.
Good day. How are you today, Jenny? This is so cool to be here with you. I am so in the groove after doing, I don't know, well over 300 shows on iTunes and iHeartRadio. Now I'm on the other side of the fence. And this is like, well, you know, you and I were talking before
okay,
the show.
Okay, so hang on a second. One of the things I was wondering about is, am I going to
see what happens? They already jump right back into the same role.
Am I going
Todd needs some control here. We're going to work
with that. I'm sitting on my hand.
Am I going to get a word in edgewise here?
We're going to work on this.
So, so this was my first question there, Todd. So after interviewing many hundreds of people over the last 6 years on your Life Mastery Radio, what is it like, from what I understand, the first time to be sitting on the other side of the microphone and having to answer the questions and wait until the rest?
Truly.
How does that feel?
Well, I'm delighted and excited, and especially because this is my first time, and it is with you, of course, and that's just really enlightening for me. But, you know, you and I were talking before the show, and what I realized was, you know, I created this intention to have a radio show, and I created an intention to have this book, and I created both of them, and I brought them into my reality.
Okay, now we're going to get into that. Hold the phone there. Hold the phone there. Because what I want to share about is that when I first met you, I saw this guy in front of the room at this Toastmaster meeting, and I believe you were in charge of over 3,000 Toastmasters. Is that correct?
Close to.
As a district director in Washington State. Yeah. And so I saw this guy in front of the room who had this successful business, who was, had this leadership position, who worked through all the ranks in the Toastmaster organization. And when I heard that you had written a book, I was quite intrigued, because it's always more interesting to read a book when you actually have a firsthand experience of the person. And I thought, well, I want to know what makes this guy tick. How did he make his dreams come true from, you know, it's always a dream of a lot of, well, some people have that dream of, you know, they're an employee at a big company and they want to strike out on their own and start a business. And you actually did that. You made a go of it, and you made a very successful go of it. And I thought, I want to know what inspired you along the way. And when I opened the book and I read at the very beginning, I was actually quite shocked. I thought, wow, this guy did not have an easy go of it. So right at the beginning of the book, and I'm reading from his Todd Allen's book, Six Keys to Life Mastery, Unlocking Life Skills for Successful Living. Right in the beginning, it says, I used to ask questions that fell flat. Why am I so down on myself? How do I shut off those constant thoughts? Why is every day so robotic and dreary? It's hard to believe that those ideas kickstarted my day, but they did. So take us back to those days, Todd. What was life really like back then?
Well, it's like being a robot, really. And you're not even really in control of your life. It's just like, you know, you create this life and it's pretty well laid out. You do this, you do this, you get this, and you wake up and it all happens over and over again. It's kind of like that. What's the name of that movie? Groundhog Day or something, you know, and it just keeps going on. And, you know, that's misery. And that's to me, that's like living in hell, basically. I mean, it's between your ears and you've created this lifestyle, but there's no creativity. There's no purpose. There's no passion. And that's kind of an extreme view of it, because we're not all like that. You know, we all have a good time and everything like that. But, you know, being a conscious co-creator with God, spirit, whatever it is that you believe.
Right, right. So let's get back to this, your story.
Have I ever told you how awesome you are?
Well, I'm glad I'm your first interview, because we're putting training wheels on here to get you to answer the questions as I ask them.
This is fun.
So if I go back to your book, because I think that the book really is a really great guide for our discussion. It lays it out, and I've painted the picture of what your life is like now, but the real guidance comes from, or the inspiration that I got from the book, at least, is when I read how you got to this place. And so early on, you had this sense that life, it sounds like you were, when I was reading the book, like there was a part of you that was just dead inside. There was a part of you that was numb inside. And I know from reading your book, early on, you went off and you joined the Marines. So how did that change things up for you? What was your experience like when you joined the Marines?
Joining the Marine Corps, a misguided kid was shown a way of living. I was totally protected. Mm-hmm. I was taught that I was totally limited only by my imagination, whereas, you know, it was anything is possible, right? It didn't really anchor that way, but I was pushed to such extremes. And then, you know, comes the realization that I can go past that boundary and shut and really push myself. So I think if any gift that I got from the Marine Corps, A, was just a sense of organization and structure and an idea that I can go way past a banner.
So what was also happening in your time in the Marines? What about what I talked about in the introduction, this whole thing about internal demons and the self-doubt, the mind chatter? Was that plaguing you at that time in your life?
Well, I was 17 years old and mm-hmm. totally misguided. I was failing in high school. I was failing in, you know, this mm-hmm. this was my, of course, the judge helped me decide, but this was my escape.
Now, what do you mean by a judge helped you decide?
Well, I wasn't exactly the most good kid, right?
Tell us the real truth. No hiding here.
Okay,
we're here to tell the truth.
I had a pretty hot car. I had, you know, this addiction to alcohol.
What? Tell us about that. What do you mean?
Well, I started drinking at an early age, and that was a huge part of my life. And so at 17, I was pretty much a well-known individual by the City of Everett Police Department.
Okay.
And they had my number. It didn't look like I was going to graduate from high school. Mm-hmm. You know, I just had these internal demons and these battles going on. And it's like, okay, you know, the judge gave me a choice. And it's like, okay, I'm checking out of this world and going to enter another one. And
what do you mean? You went to recovery as a result of the judge telling you? Is that what you mean?
No, the United States Marine Corps.
Oh, okay. Okay. So in the Marine Corps, were you still, was the addiction still something that was happening in the Marine Corps?
Well, in boot camp, you have access to absolutely nothing. So there's 90 days that you get to dry out, right? And you know, it's just intense. And gosh, I can remember going to boot camp and about 2 weeks into it,
what is it like when you've been drinking a lot and then you have to work out really hard physically?
I don't know that I have, you know, a clear indication of what that was like or what happened. You know, boot camp was intense. Boot camp was a total and a complete radical change to the way I understood the world. And it wasn't long before I found myself in my rack, that's bed that we mm-hmm. call it, you know, in a squad bay where there's hundreds of beds,
mm-hmm.
you know, crying like a little baby for my mommy because mm-hmm. this was not where I thought I would be. You know, I wanted to be this tough guy and this rough, you know, I was going to take on the world, right?
Right, well, right.
It was a rude awakening. But then, you know, I got in the groove and I really, really got into the program. You know, the United States Marine Corps took a young, misguided kid and showed him a way of life that made a huge difference in my life. I would not go back and do it any different, to tell
you
the truth.
Right, right. You tell the story in the book about that being your first reawakening in terms of leaving behind addiction. Is that right? I mean, is that...
That was years later in the United States Marine Corps.
Okay.
But, you know, back then, that's what we did. You know, we worked mm-hmm. all day long, shined our boots, pressed our uniforms, and then it was to the enlisted club or out into town and just get completely inebriated, crawl back into our barracks and into our rack, but up by 7 a.m. and ready to go because, you know, that was our responsibility. So that took some time. And, you know, I think that I consumed enough alcohol in the United States Marine Corps to last me the rest of my life. So I don't need any more. I've already consumed all of that.
Right.
But it wasn't long, and I found myself in trouble. And actually, it was involved in a accident where a police officer was hurt.
Mm.
I was drunk.
Mm.
And the United States Marine Corps said, "Mister, we have a program for you." And they sent me to alcohol treatment, and it was 4 weeks mm-hmm. of, you know, education and understanding. And
you know, how receptive were you when you were mandated to do it? Like, were you ready for that change at that point in your life? Or did you go willingly? Or,
you know, I think it planted some seeds.
Okay.
I had to go. I didn't have a choice. There was no choice.
Right.
This was something that I was directed and ordered to do.
Right.
So I'm sure it planted some seeds. Did it catch on? I still had to go out, and I wasn't quite at the end of my rope yet. I wasn't in desperation.
Yeah.
Right? It's just, I got some punishment. I got some things that happened to me, and I continued on into life, and it wasn't long before I ended up back in that same boat.
So what happened next? So at the same time, because this is a book about making dreams come true as well, this is not just, let me say, this is not a book specifically about recovery from addiction at all, but it does play a part into the spiritual awakening. But at the same time, you had this dream to have your own business, right? Or tell us how that happened.
Well, the Marines taught me a trade, and when I got out of the Marines, I found a place to learn more about that trade. So, you know, I learned about airplanes and aircraft and the hydraulic systems that were in them in the United States Marine Corps. And then when I got out, you know, I instantly found a job because of my skill the Marines gave me.
Right.
And then I began to discover industrial hydraulics and marine hydraulics, whole nother world. And so I spent, you know, probably 15 years learning all of the ins and outs of that industry and understanding it. And I came to discover that, you know, I became like a machine whisperer, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of a big buzzword, but it's almost like machines told me what was wrong with them, and then I could fix them and get them working again. And so I got really good at that. And then I started to get the idea about, you know, I could really have my own gig. And that led me to understanding what that would look like. I created the vision.
So you had drawn it out at one point, right? You had seen something in a magazine. Tell us about your first visualization that led you to think that you could.
Yeah, in a trade publication, I read about a shop called Baltimore Hydraulics in Baltimore, Maryland. And as I read this article, it's like, wow, that's everything that I would want in a shop. That's everything that I would want to do. And I cut that article out. I blew it up and I pinned it to the wall. And, you know, every day I saw it. And every day I created this vision of what that would be like and how that would work. And, you know, I just created all of these connections. And eventually the opportunity came for me to step out and I created it. I had no experience in business administration or understanding of, you know, spreadsheets and balance sheets and income statements, none of that. I was just good at fixing machines. And this thing just grew up around me.
This is a great story. So we're going to get into this a little bit more here about what that actually meant. But before we do, it's time for us to take a break. You're listening to Manson Mitchell on Alternative Talk, AM 1150, and we'll be right back with Todd Allen after this short break.
Hello, my name is Marie Manucheri. I'm an energy intuitive author and host of Where Energy and Medicine Meet. During the show, I answer callers' questions, intuitively, of course, and provide invaluable guidance. I also interview others who I believe are on the leading edge of thought. Tune in on Thursday mornings at 9 a.m. Pacific Time on 1150 a.m. in Seattle or live wherever you are at energyintuitive.com.
Some knowledge belongs to us and us alone. The way our girlfriends walk, the way they talk, the way they touch their hair. We hold details that only a sister can know about her girls. But what about our other girls? The ones that we carry with us every day. Can we describe them when everything's right? Can we feel when something's wrong? Our bond with our sister girls gives life. But knowing your breasts can save it.
You don't know what.
Go to knowyourgirls.org for the facts you need on breast health. That's knowyourgirls.org, brought to you by Susan G. Coleman and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Susan Harmon, inviting you to join me every Friday, noon to 1 p.m. Pacific Time, for the Susan Harmon Hour. I'm always curious and I enjoy discussing a wide array of interesting and provocative subjects with fascinating and erudite guests. If you're looking for grounded authenticity with a twist, you'll want to join us for a fast-moving and informative hour right here on Alternative Talk 1150.
Broaden your horizons. You'll be amazed at all the topics we cover on Alternative Talk 1150.
Welcome back to Manson Mitchell. My name is Jen Martin, and I'm filling in for Gary and Suzanne today. And we're talking to Todd Allen Cutterback, the author of Six Keys to Life Mastery, Unlocking Life Skills for Successful Living. Before the break, we were talking about how he had this dream to start his business and how he manifested that. So I want to go back to what you talk about in your book in that regard, Todd, and you talk about the subject of intention. So tell us how that intention really contributed to you going from reading something in a magazine about I'd like to have this business to having a business that has been successfully going for the last 20 years now, have many employees.
Right.
What?
Well, that's, you know, it was about this time that I hooked up with Mary Manon Morrissey and her book, Building Your Field of Dreams. So I started to...
Now, who is that, in case people don't know? Who is she?
She's a new thought leader.
Okay. Now, how did you, what do you mean by hookup? You were this guy that works in this technical bit. How did you get into her world and find this book?
Yeah, I was blown through an airport. I was going to, a remote place, a man's world in Alaska, where there was lots of hydraulics and lots for me to do. And I was blown through the airport, and this book just jumped out at me. And it was more about the picture that was on the front of the book, this, you know, beautiful woman, building your field of dreams. It all caught my attention. I didn't have a book. You know, I needed something.
Just needed something to read on the plane.
Exactly.
Okay.
And boom, this book just jumped out at me. Most books do, you know, while walking through a bookstore.
Now, had you ever read anything that would be considered metaphysical or spiritual up to that point?
Nothing.
You didn't have a spiritual belief system or anything. You didn't even believe that there was a...
I grew up with the thought of God and...
But it wasn't a daily something that was really in your
mind. And I always battled with that because my parents were Presbyterian and I grew up going to church every Sunday. But I can remember thinking, wow, we shoot rockets where God is supposed to be and we drill for oil down there where hell's supposed to be. And this really doesn't make sense. I couldn't put it together. How does this work? You know? And so I always had a curiosity.
Right.
But this book... really began to plant some seeds.
What were some things that jumped out to you out of it when you first read it?
You know, building, you know, what it takes to follow a dream, what it takes to create that vision and the thoughts and ideas around abundance and setting an intention and the law of attraction.
So would you say that this is the first time that you really got a sense, because we were talking earlier about the idea of, you know, having these internal demons and having this mind chatter and so forth, and you had mentioned that you were plagued by that before. Was this the first time you read someone talk about the fact that you can actually take charge of your mind and actually use it for creativity?
I don't think I got that out of it at that
time.
Okay. I got that. What I got out of that is how to make a dream come true. And at that time in my life, you know, it was still all about brute force and sheer horsepower. And so I kind of combined the two worlds. You know, I'm all about sheer force and brute horsepower. The Marines taught me how to take that hill, right? And yet here I had the basic understanding of some principles that would help me create my dreams.
That you were, but it was going to be up to you. You were going to make it happen. And you don't, it wasn't so much about higher power. It was about you. Okay.
Totally.
Okay.
Totally. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does make sense. It totally makes sense. So so you have this business. It's going really well. Does it exceed your dreams at the beginning? I mean, were you surprised that it's going so well?
You know, I was really good at fixing machines. And
But more and more customers started to come. You had to hire people.
Totally. I got up to 18 people. And so here's the idea behind that is, you know, I intentionally created this thing that then started to become a monster, right? I had no way of dealing with this stuff.
What do you mean it became a monster? What does that mean?
Well, it got too big for me. I had no way of handling, you know, it was all about me and it was all about me.
So you were the owner rather than employee.
Right.
And it was a successful business and the buck stops here. You're the one that was the go-to guy, right?
I had all these multi-million dollar contracts and 18 employees and trying to, you know, and it just got to be.
So I would say there's a lot of stress involved with that.
Totally.
Right?
And I started smoking weed. And it just got to the point where I was smoking a lot of weed.
So you would, were you doing that while you were working during the day?
Totally. It got to that point. Yeah. I'd go out to my truck and take a pop just because it helped me. I don't know that it helped me, but it numbed me. Right. And I could kind of deal with what was going on as those fastballs came at me, you know, and trying to catch them and letting them bounce off of you. But, you know, I found.
So you were drinking as well?
No,
like you did
No.
Oh, you're just smoking.
Nope, I was just smoking weed. Nobody knew I was smoking weed. The only guy that knew really was the guy I was buying it from.
Okay. And, so you were totally functional in your job, right?
Totally.
Okay.
But it got to a point where I
And doing financially well, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
But, you know, I was beginning to, you know, lose my morals, principles, and values, and I couldn't smoke enough weed after a while to get what I needed, right?
Okay.
My tolerance had gotten so high. And although I had quit drinking for 10 years because of my second trip to alcohol rehab, I crossed the line again.
Now, what was the second trip? I don't know if we covered that. What was the second trip?
Oh, you know, being a rough and tuggy guy and working and drinking a lot. And
well, this
know,
is after the Marines.
Yes.
Okay.
Totally.
And were you running your business at this time?
No.
Okay.
No, I was working for.
And what would you say, what was going on in your life at that time that you were really turning to alcohol?
Oh, a lot of responsibility. I had just gotten married. I had a one-year-old daughter, and I owned a house, and trying to survive in life, you know, and all of that stress and not getting along with the wife, and, you know, it.
Was it like something you would come home and have a drink, or was it during the day, or I mean
after work?
After
totally,
work,
right.
So you were highly functional during the day, doing you know.
Oh yeah, and highly successful,
and then
the
it
bar,
was something
get inebriated just, and then come home, and that caused problems in my life.
And then, but every day you'd wake up and you, no
go
one
again?
Would know, and you would do your job, and but it would be something at night. Okay,
and then come home late, wife would be upset, you know, and yet I was trying to be a success and provide for her and the new baby and. Yeah, I just turned to alcohol, and, you know, one thing led to another, and huge arguments, huge battles, and she left and took my daughter with her.
And that's what caused you to go and check yourself in?
Totally. My boss came to me and said, dude, I got you covered. I'll take care of her. You need to go. Because he noticed, too, right?
Okay.
I mean, he was a major part of my world, and, yeah, I could function, and I could fix machines, and,
right.
Yeah, you know, I was
right. And so was there any spiritual awakening that happened that second time?
No, I was introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I can remember getting out of intensive inpatient 21 days, and it was highly recommended that I become highly involved in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I can remember getting home, and I went to one meeting, and I said, forget this. I don't need this. And I took off into life again. And
after one meeting?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. I didn't need this. I was in complete. I didn't get it.
You were in complete control.
Right.
So that's a theme here about you self-reliance. You don't need anyone but yourself, right?
Boom. And I didn't drink for 10 years. But
oh, after that, you didn't drink for 10 years?
No, but I started smoking weed like five years into it.
Oh, okay. So you successfully stopped for 5 years.
Ten.
Until it. But you started another addiction.
Chemicals, right.
Yeah.
Right. But weed's been a major part of my life since I was 13, 14 years old. So, yeah. That's a whole other part of that story.
Right. And so.
Somehow I justified it in my mind that weed was okay, right? I was in control. I just needed to. Nobody knew. Not my wife, not friends. It was total secrecy.
Oh, okay. So you're doing this way after you've got recovery from alcohol, after you've had, you know, this many years of nothing in your life. What caused you that one day that you decided to go back and after having, you had 5 years of nothing, right?
I had no program. I had nothing in place to help me deal with life.
So are you saying that at some point the stress of your business.
I hadn't started the business yet.
Oh, okay.
I was still working for another guy, but I had gotten another house, and now I had two kids.
Okay.
And a wife.
Okay.
You know, trying to juggle all those balls, and I had no program. I had no sense of a higher power really in my life. I had none of the keys that I talk about in the book to help me deal with life on a day-to-day basis.
And you talk about in the book, this is on page 61, you say, for better or worse, I had to reach a point of desperation where I was literally on my knees. So what was that point when that happened?
Well, that's the story we started a little bit earlier. So,
okay.
You know, I copied Baltimore Hydraulics and built this business, and this thing just grew rapidly, and I got too big for my britches, right? I was still smoking weed. I was smoking so much every day. I was burning the back of my throat. I couldn't, you know, I would have to get up in the middle of the night just to get high to go back to sleep. So I got to the point where I couldn't smoke enough weed fast enough, right? I couldn't get what I needed. I started drinking again, and I took right off, right where I left off before, and it took me 3 months, and it was intense. I would drink myself into stupors. There wasn't enough alcohol in the world to satisfy the hunger that I had, and it took.
And how did you know it was time that you needed to go get recovery?
Because I'd been in treatment before, there was this little voice in my mind that said, dude, you're headed in the wrong way. I had an affair. I was, you know, not able to handle my business, and things were just getting totally out of control. And I told my assistant, I said, look, if I disappear, this is where I'm at. And I called my accountant. My accountant just went nuts. He's like, how can you leave? You got all this stuff going on. I was like, dude, if I don't go, there isn't going to be anything left.
So
called my mom and told her what the deal was, and she took me.
Oh, okay. Yeah, when we were talking earlier, you talked about going home every day and just being so stressed out that there was so much going on and no one taught you how to deal with a successful business.
I had no system in place.
Right, but even just being a business owner, right? You didn't even have that grounding ahead of time of how to deal with all the stress and everything coming at you. So, and it can be, it's not uncommon for people in lots of professions to find themselves going home after a very stressful day and having a few drinks or smoke. I mean, but you're talking about it kicking into addiction pretty quickly, right?
Well, yeah. When you don't work a program and this is my understanding, when you stop drinking, right, and you're not working any kind of program to deal with those internal negative emotions and feelings and, you know, your past. I mean, there's a whole bunch of inside work that you need to do. And so in that 10-year period, I basically just negated that whole 10-year period and started right back where I left off, right? There was, it wouldn't have been, why even stop for 10 years, right? You should have just kept going, hit your point of desperation, and then start.
Right.
So I delayed all of that for like 10 years.
Right. And the whole thing about this mind chatter and the monkey mind, I can see how you were saying that you turn to drugs or alcohol to be able to numb, you know, to quiet your mind. But what was interesting, I think really enlightening for a reader, is to realize how at a certain point your body could be completely drunk. You couldn't even lift your arm, you said in one page. But your mind never stopped the monkey mind. After a certain point, you were so...
They call that tolerance.
Okay. Yeah. So you weren't getting... You wanted to numb out. You wanted to quiet the mind, but actually it was actually causing it to race even more. Is that correct?
Well, that's where the disease really takes over, and it really, really takes over a person's life. And, you know, they either can end up in institutions or hospitals. But fortunately for me, because of my past exposure, there was this little voice in my head said, dude, you better get to treatment. You better check in. Yeah.
Which is a really quite amazing, because we live in a place right now where homelessness is just everywhere.
Yeah.
And I met a homeless man the other night when I was at a volunteer job who walked in, and you know, you could just tell by his face, he had a very red face, red nose, the whole thing. And he had a story that he got addicted that night, and he needed money for a new place. He asked for $11 for a new apartment. Well, geez, we live in Seattle. $11 is not going to rent you anything, right? But it was you know, clear that he'd been living on the street for a while, the way he had all his belongings on his back. But somebody gave him the $11, and this sense of panic that was coming from him, and the way he was communicating before he got the money, was completely alleviated as soon as the money was put in his hand, and his just whole demeanor calmed down, and he started to share about how many years ago he played the clarinet and he was in a band and everything, and he started to reminisce how he used to be somebody and how he used to have this sense of, I mean, really what it was dignity. And my heart broke for him, because you could see inside that man was a man with dreams at one point. Inside that man was a man who could walk with his head up high down the street. But addiction has completely taken him over. And, you know, the calm that so my work as a psychotherapist, right? I can see these things, right? And and I'm not telling you anything you don't know, Todd, right? Because you've had firsthand experience. I haven't had firsthand experience, but you've had this firsthand experience of how your nervous system can go from this panic when you don't have your drug of choice to completely calm and at ease when you know you're going to get your next fix, right?
I can so identify with what you just described. Heaven forbid that I would ever run out of pot.
Right.
Because it was just instant panic. Oh, man, where's the dude? Where am I going to get my next? I got to have at least some hope that I had some ability to take that next hit.
Right, yeah.
I can remember scraping pipes and, oh, my gosh, it's just crazy. Just the frenzy.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, the good thing is there's a good conclusion here, and we're going to keep you hanging.
Da-da-da.
And so we're going to be, we have to take another break here. We'll be right back with Todd Allen Cuddeback, author of Life Mastery. After a short break, you're listening to Manson Mitchell on Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Staying connected with Gary Mance and Suzanne Mitchell is easy. Just go to mansonmitchell.com for the latest info on topics and guests. Friend Gary Mance and Suzanne Mitchell on their Facebook pages and like the Mance and Mitchell show page at facebook.com/Mance and Mitchell. If you're on Twitter, share a follow with Gary and Suzanne at Mance Mitchell. Join Gary and Suzanne Friday and Saturday mornings at 10 a.m. for an unusual show that covers everything from personal growth to the paranormal.
Here's an amazing act. Here's a tremendous act. Here's a startling act. The amazing, the thrilling, the greatest, spectacular, incredible, exciting, wonderful, world fame, most unusual, novelty act.
The home of the A-Team of Alternative Talk is manceandmitchell.com. Heard right here on Alternative Talk 1150 AM or streaming live from your computer anywhere.
When you look at me, you might see my tremor,
my lack of facial expression,
a person with Parkinson's disease.
But you may not see
that I have trouble sleeping,
that no two treatment plans are the same.
I was diagnosed at 65.
37, earlier than most.
But if you look closer,
you'll see
a warrior mom,
an endurance athlete,
someone who is still dancing,
someone with a lot of fight.
Every 9 minutes, someone is diagnosed with Parkinson's disease.
And every one of them can turn to the American Parkinson Disease Association
for education,
for community,
for support.
Look closer,
and you'll see
my resolve,
my determination,
my spirit
is unshakable.
Visit apdaparkinson.org to learn more and show your support today.
I'm Gary Mance.
I'm Suzanne Mitchell.
We're a couple of baby boomers who bring you a talk radio mix of metaphysics and music, politics, and pop culture.
And you never know which celebrity will join us for an interesting conversation.
Mance and Mitchell is Boomer HQ, Friday and Saturday mornings at 10 on 1150 AM KKNW.
Your home for alternative talk in Seattle and Western Washington.
Find out the latest about your favorite shows on Alternative Talk 1150. Check out 1150kknw.com.
Welcome back to Manson Mitchell. My name is Jen Martin, and I'm filling in for Gary and Suzanne today. And we're talking to Todd Allen Cuddeback. His book is Six Keys to Life Mastery. Todd, where can we get your book?
Amazon. It's on Amazon. I have a website. There are two free chapters to download. Just trade me your email address, and I won't use that for anything.
And what's your website?
ToddAllen.net.
Okay, great.
ToddAllen.net.
Okay, great. So before the break, we were talking about your Dark Night of the Soul. We were talking about how addiction really had you. And so tell us what happened next. Like, how, where do you go from here? You checked yourself into recovery, and you had already done that two other times.
Well, the Marines did it for me once before.
Okay.
And the second time, it was totally on my own. Yeah, I did it.
Okay.
But it didn't stick.
And you talked about in your book how your sponsor told you believe. What did they say about belief?
Well, when I crashed and burned the third time, mm-hmm. I mean, crashed and burned. I had had an affair. I admitted to it. Mm-hmm. So I got serious this time. I was on my knees. Mm-hmm. And I went to treatment. Of course, I took Mary's book, Building Your Field of Dreams, with me. That was the only book I took. Mm-hmm. And I really knew that I needed to do something different. Mm-hmm. And I needed to get out of control totally. And, you know, reading Mary's book again, then the metaphysics started to kick in and the understanding of how I needed to do some inside work, but I also needed to find a higher power. And that was a huge step for me, because that concept and that idea just was not in my bailiwick, let's say.
It was all about you making it
happen,
right?
Right.
Right.
So turning, you know, I had to get into the steps, and I would look at those steps and think, what happens if I do that? And I could do this one, but man, I don't know that I can admit that I'm powerless, right? How can I say that I'm powerless over alcohol and that my life has become unmanageable? It's just, that's a tough nut for a guy. And that's the first step, of course.
Right, right, right. So tell us about this. You have a story in the book about wanting to know that spirit was actually looking out for you. Well, tell us about how that came about.
Right. So I think you're relating to the Fox story?
Yeah.
Yeah. Truly fascinating. So I was in early recovery, and I committed to doing 90 meetings in 90 days and checking myself into aftercare and finding a sponsor, all of this stuff. I could see people had something, and I knew I needed to do it, because if I ended up where I was again, I would probably die. There was no hope.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really questioning the whole idea of a higher power and God and the concept and spirituality and early recovery. So I would go to a meeting every day, sometimes five or six times a week. And this one meeting, I sat at a table, and it was just me and another guy. And come to find out, his name was Todd.
Mm.
And that was kind of cool. And we got into this whole discussion about our name. What else did we have in common, right? I had never seen him before. And we got into this conversation, and he explained to me the meaning of Todd, and it means fox. And I related to a movie, little cartoon movie, I think it was called The Fox and the Hound, that my girls were just in love with, you know, young little kids, it's a cartoon. And the fox's name was Todd, and we talked all about that. So the meeting went on, but I was in serious contemplation. I can remember, I need some proof. I need some evidence. I need to know. I wanted to know that this concept of God and spirituality was real, right? Mm-hmm. People talked mm-hmm. about it. I knew about it. So mm-hmm. After that meeting, I got in my truck, and at that time, I lived on Grand. My shop was on Grand, and the meeting hall that I went to, where everything, my whole life was on Grand Avenue. It was all Grand, right?
Okay.
I got in my truck, and I'm driving down Grand toward my house, and I look out, and running along the sidewalk next to my truck was what I perceived to be a fox. Now, was it a fox? Was it a coyote? It was definitely not a dog.
Mm-hmm.
But I perceived it to be a fox, and he stayed right with my truck.
Have you ever seen a fox running along? Was this in Everett?
Yes.
Have downtown. You ever seen a nope. fox running nope. downtown
nope.
Everett
nope.
before?
Nope. Nope. Nope.
And you were a complete sober state of mind?
Totally.
Okay.
I was just going home.
Right.
And he stayed with me for 10 blocks. Even Steven.
Oh,
running
God.
Along the sidewalk, and I'm driving down the street. I got to the stoplight right before my shop, and this fox didn't stop. He booked across the street, and right before my shop, there's an alley, and he turned down that alley and disappeared right before me. Poof. And, I'm getting goosebumps now just reliving this story, but that was like, dude, here's your sign. Get with the program. What more do I need to do? Right? It's like way beyond synchronicity, way beyond coincidence. It's
and you just, had asked that night or
totally.
Just before that, give me a sign that spirit is with me.
Well, that it's possible.
Possible that spirit is with me. And you find this person says that Todd's your name is related to the name of a fox.
It means fox. Well, it's not not only related, but if you look up somewhere in birth names, right?
Oh, okay.
It's fox.
And here we have this thing running alongside your truck.
Baby, I'm telling you.
Did you decide that maybe it doesn't have to be all you in control after that?
Well, that was the start, That was just the start. And then my belief started to catch hold. And there was many, many, many more showings of evidence that how if I accepted God into my life.
Well, give me another example.
Oh, just with flowers,
Tell me about flowers. You talked about flowers. Yeah, tell me about that.
So this goes way back when I was a kid. My parents divorced, and I was very distraught. And, my mom was really having trouble with me. I was not with the program. She took me to a psychologist, and I would sit there in front
of... And you were a little guy?
I was 13.
Okay.
And I would sit there and just be a bump on the log with this psychologist, not going anywhere, not going to listen, not going to do nothing, just sit there.
That's why I don't deal with children.
I know. I know, right? I was
like, I don't want to deal with children.
Now you know why my mom was bringing me there.
Right.
But he had a discussion with my mom. He says, Todd, I have an understanding that you have this huge backyard. Have you ever considered maybe like doing something like growing flowers? And man, that hit me like a Mack truck. I was like, this dude's off his rocker. He wants me to grow flowers. This ain't going to happen. I'm a rough and tugged teenage boy and we don't grow flowers. This is just not in my makeup.
Right.
I got in my mom's car and I told her point blank, I'm not going back there again. This guy is crazy.
It's intriguing that he actually said that to you. But okay, but where does the story go from there?
Well, fast forward, 25 years and out of treatment, and I began to surround myself with fresh cut flowers. And they were beautiful to me, and I just was like, I had to have them. I would buy them for my office. I would buy them for my home. I would give them to friends. I gave them to my assistant. I would show up at my mom's house with a fistful of flowers. I couldn't get enough of it.
So when we were talking before this, you were mentioning, which I thought was really intriguing, that, and I didn't pick this up from the book until you told me about it, and that is the whole idea that you had known about this God, the idea of God as being kind of more of this fatherly kind of figure, right? And that distant kind of thing. And the whole flower introduction of the, flowers, when the therapist suggested that, it was almost like I'm using my own words, so correct me if I'm saying this wrong, but it was almost like the divine feminine was trying to get to know you, or the feminine aspect of God was reaching out to you. Am I understanding what you said earlier correctly?
Yeah, this was a revelation for me. I mean, this was definitely a turning point in my life. I soon, got a pierced ear. That was not in my realm.
Was that to state anything about your sexual identity?
No, I was with my daughters, and we were walking through the mall, and I was teasing them that I should get a pierced ear, and they were all about it. I mean, these are three, young teenagers and one preteen.
But you didn't do it because you're to state make a statement about being gay. You did
totally
it because
no,
what,
no, no.
What?
It created a whole bond. Why did I do it? I don't know. Maybe just to express my connection with the feminine side at that point in my life. And
okay.
It was a bond, total bonding experience with my daughter. They'll never forget it. They'll,
right.
You know, sit standing there with their dad and him getting a pierced ear. But that's a mile marker because I came to understand that a man in ancient times really didn't understand his true self and get connected to his spiritual self until he figured out who Sophia was. This hit me like a baseball bat too, like somebody whacked me upside the head with a 2x4. And I researched that and Sophia was the feminine side of God. And I was like, whoa, this is what's happening to me. And I totally opened up to it. And, you know, after that, that's a mile marker in my life. And my life just started to get even more magical and special. And I soon found myself connected to a power greater than myself that gave me power that I could tap into.
That is so powerful because I haven't heard many men say that. So what you're saying is, from what I remember you saying earlier, that you wouldn't have really found the spiritual connection that is so fuels you today and so transformed your life if you hadn't had that introduction to the feminine at first. Is
totally.
That,
and
is
I
that
think,
correct?
You know, I had some really cool teachers at that time. Alan Cohen, he totally got me to understand the concept of connecting and being connected. And Mary Manon Morsey was big in my life then too. So these two people had great influence on me in helping me find that inside part of me and that feminine side. Or, you know, I don't want to say that, like the divine feminine.
Divine feminine.
You know, I think we all have both parts of those. Certainly, I am more masculine than I am feminine, but...
You still do your machine shop, and you're still, you know, you're still very much in that world, right? But you have been able to embrace this aspect of life,
totally.
Too.
And yeah. It's a huge, huge mile marker in my life and changing my life.
So at the end of the book, you talk about the concept of wizardry, and we just have a very short time left. Tell us about what that is. That's very intriguing near the end of the book.
Well, it's just a great way to describe the way I live my life. And I think, you know, wizardry is in our, you know, the whole Harry Potter thing and all of that. But it just helps me to be able to describe it to others of what my life is like. Now,
is it what your life is like or what anyone could have?
Sure. What anybody could have.
And
it's not all about casting spells and that kind of magic. It's just a magical life.
What you're really saying is to surrender to something beyond yourself. Is that what you're saying?
Right, and tap into that force, right?
The force.
The force.
I like the thing. I like the concept of the force. Yeah.
So do I. I think a lot of people identify with that too.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. So is there any last parting message you would like to leave with our listeners today, Todd, to help them on their way to life mastery?
Read the book. Believe that it's what I believe until you can believe it and you can have a magic life too.
That you believe it for other people. Well, I've had a lot of fun today hosting
me too,
for
me too.
Gary.
Let's do it again. Let's
Thank
do it
you
again.
So much, Todd, for being on the show. I'm Jen Martin from drjen.net, and that I've been talking to Todd Allen from toddallen.net. And I want to thank Benny for his help at the board today.
I did great, and you did great. We all did great. Everyone did it.
Thank you. Well, everyone have a great week, and join Manson Mitchell tomorrow at 10 a.m.